You're listening to the Why Big Football Show, the Irish soccer show by the fans for the fans. If you want to get involved with the show, advertise, or even sponsor, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter, @theworldstalking, without the G. We'll chat to you soon. Come on, the boys in green. You're very welcome to the Why Big Football Show, the Irish soccer show by the fans for the fans. I'm Dave O'Grady. Traps men pass the test against Bosnia and prepare for their final warm-up match against Hungary. I can't believe it's so close to the Euros. Kevin Foley and Keith Fahey are out, while Paul McShane and Paul Green are in. And we'll look ahead to all the gossip surrounding the squad in their base in Italy. Well, we're delighted to be joined by a man who wore the green jersey with pride and was equally as proud when he managed the Irish team. You can now hear him doing top quality analysis and commentary for RT. Owen Hand, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show.
Hello, Dave. Pleasure to be on.
Great stuff. We're also joined by our two fans, James and Joe. James, coming to yourself first from PogueMagull.com. James, it's great to have you on the show, no doubt. You're all excited as the Euros are approaching.
Yeah, just the last minute preparations now, Dave. Still a couple of flights and trains and things to sort out, but we'll get there. It's just around the corner now.
Exactly, and you're flying from London out. I'd imagine that's a little bit cheaper than a lot of people going direct from Dublin.
It is, and even just a word of advice, anyone thinking about still going or looking at ways to get there, you can still get there quite cheaply from London, even into Gdansk. I saw a flight for £30 sterling last week in time for the Spain game, so it's worth bearing in mind.
Yeah, very good. We're also joined by our Limerick man living in Dublin, Joe. And I know, Joe, you've been having debates with your other half about whether you're going to go, whether you're not going to go, whether you could convince her to go. What's the outcome?
Yeah, we're all set here. Flying out on Friday week, going through Copenhagen and into Poznan on the Friday night before the Croatia game. And we're staying in Poznan for a week and a half, and then we're flying back the day after the Italy game, and we're flying back directly into Dublin. We just the same situation ourselves, just a few minor bits and pieces, trains between the cities for to sort out. But all looking really good at the moment.
Yeah, sounds like a terrific trip, and no doubt you're going to enjoy that. Well, Owen, I have to come to yourself first, and looking at the Irish team, their preparation for the Euros couldn't have gone really better, looking back at last weekend's win against Bosnia and Herzegovina. I think the team really stepped up to it, and particularly in that second half, there was only going to be one winner. Ireland could have probably scored a good few more goals, I think.
Yeah, it was an excellent game to finish off at home, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, the main worry would be in games like that somebody would get an injury. And, of course, we did have the scare with Robbie Keane, who quite easily could have fractured a rib, you know, with the centre-back's left knee came up into his rib cage, and that could so easily have been a broken rib. So, as it was, he was just badly winded. So they're the things that any manager is really, you know, very anxious to avoid. And, you know, everything went great, and we won the game, you know, as you say, comfortably in the end. And I thought what was really kind of the revelation of Aidan McGeady, because I have been critical of him in the past, but I thought he was absolutely, you know, his finishing, and talking about final ball, was absolutely, it was totally different Aidan McGeady.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, was it the fact that perhaps he had received a little bit of criticism in the Irish media towards a few of the performances, although he did pick up the Man of the Match award in a couple of the qualifiers or that, but a lot of people were saying that he didn't have the finishing product, and, you know, he'd do the hard work and then the cross into the box would always let him down. But what do you think it was that really made him step up to the mark?
Competition for places, I think, you know, it really was, because, and also the fact that he was introduced into the game. He is a player that saved during the qualifying rounds that the opposition, you know, there's immense scouting done. Everybody knows the strength of opposition, and they know how to play McGeady. I mean, you just sort of hold him up, and then back up two against one against him. And of course, Aidan, in my opinion, wasn't taking advantage of that, because if there's two against one, it means that you've got somebody spare somewhere else. His head was down too much. So I suppose maybe coming on and sort of being introduced in the second half stood to his advantage. But he certainly, you know, he showed a different player altogether in terms of his head was up, and he was picking out some lovely passes, and you know, might have scored a goal himself, and actually made three for Jonathan Walters, the reminder one that he did for Shane Long.
Yes, certainly. And I think another positive, Owen, that has to be said is the strength and depth that we have in the striking department. I mean, obviously, Robbie Keane and Kevin Doyle started the match, but throughout the second half, we've seen the likes of Shane Long and Jonathan Walters, and they looked in great shape. And it's good to have, I guess, five top-class strikers.
It is, and that's where you've got to give great credit to Trapattoni for, you know, the contingency planning that he did. You know, so, I mean, really, if you look at the 11 that we know, we think are going to go start against Croatia, but there's another 11 that could do just as well. You know, you think Westwood, McShane, O'Dea, Kelly, Hunt, Gibson, Green, McLean, Walters, Long, Cox, and then, you know, David Ford being the 23rd one. So, yeah, it's a good, strong squad. And it's great to see, first of all, so important to have Richard Dunn back, and, you know, as immense as ever on Saturday, because he is vital to us, there's no doubt about it. You know, himself, Shea Given's presence alone gives a lift to the team. John O'Shea, too, it's great to see he's back. Damien Duff, now, not the Damien of all, but still very effective at that high level. You know, so Robbie Keane, of course, I mean, there was kind of worries that how would he react to life in California.
Yeah.
Out in LA there, but he, you know, it's, in fact, he's looked sharper than ever.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
There's been an awful lot of pluses, and that's where the manager does need a bit of luck, and it's all just turning up good at the right time.
Yeah, on a sad note, Owen, I guess it's a little bit disappointing to see what's happened with Kevin Foley. Obviously, he was picked in Giovanni Trapattoni's initial squad, and he's actually out there in Italy. And in fact, I think, as far as I know, he's going to be playing some part in that match against Tuscany. But, you know, the injury just, he couldn't shake it off. And Trapattoni, he's come to the conclusion that it would be best to include Paul McShane in his final squad, and Kevin Foley can make the journey home. I mean, for yourself, what would it be like for a manager to make a decision like that? Obviously, Trapattoni was saying it's one of the hardest decisions he's had to make.
Well, look, you might say that, but it is disappointing. But, you know, Kevin, he wasn't one of the regulars, you know, so fine. He was part of the squad. But, I mean, I see that he's actually invited to stay on, and I think that's great. You know,
yeah.
Okay, fine, he won't have an active part unless there is an injury, and then you can call somebody else. So he's standby still. But he's invited to stay on, and I think that's great. But, I mean, when you have a call to make about, say, John O'Shea or, okay, now, I thought actually Paul McShane did well on Saturday. I wouldn't like to see him playing centre-back because he's a bad decision-maker in vital times, but out on the flanks as a defender, nothing wrong with him. We know his enthusiasm. So, a very difficult call to make for the manager, but, you know, you always, as a manager, you make your call, and unfortunately, when you've made your call, whoever is left out, that's the unfortunate thing. You've got to go on the positive side, and basically you're saying, well, he's in, and it finishes up that somebody's out. It's the same when I was doing it. There was always the disappointment of who you didn't pick, you know,
yeah.
And of course, unfortunately, sometimes that makes the headlines more than the guys who are picked.
Yeah, and just on a final point about the Irish team there, Owen, I mean, looking at the Euros and the group, I mean, there's no such thing as an easy European Championships group. Would you give our lads much chance of getting out of it?
Oh, I'd give them every chance of getting out of it. I think, first of all, I think it's great, you know, listening to the two lads there, James and Joe, the very fact that we were drawn in Poland, that to me was the plus, because immediately we can get access to the games, we can get a good support. If we were based in the Ukraine, it would be much more difficult. So that was a plus. After that, I didn't care who we were picked against. And I think it's a really intriguing group, and I give us every chance because, you know, the first game, of course, is vital, you know, not to lose it. And Croatia will be thinking the same. And I just think it's going to come down to, you know, the last game to win against Italy will put us through. And, you know, there's no reason why we can't beat Italy. You know? So I think that I really am confident that we'll qualify because the spirit of that group, it's again, credit to the manager. He has a really tightly knit group there. They know what's expected of them. There's no messing off the park or anything like that. Everybody's disciplined. Nothing like what happened, say, with England and South Africa, all the nonsense that was going on off the park, never mind that. So, you know, I think our lads will do us proud out there.
And just coming to yourself, Joe, on this point, because you're obviously going to be watching the games in the stadium, which, and when we had John Delaney on the program a couple of weeks ago, he was making the point that the amount of Irish that are going to be out there will certainly be our 12th man on the field, and it'll be a great atmosphere, and no doubt the fans are going to play a key role, and you guys will really drive the team on.
Yeah, well, we've a long history of support, an away, strong away support. You know, if we go back to looking even in Japan and South Korea, in the States, the Italy game was like the lads said it was like a home game, and you go back to Italy, in Sardinia, in Genoa, and in Rome itself, the Irish support were noted for their numbers, the noise that they made as well. So I mean, we're hoping to play our part, and I definitely think we're going to outnumber, the opposition fans, and hopefully that'll help the team drive on to the result.
Yeah, hopefully. And Owen, from a manager's point of view, of course you managed Ireland, what was that like? And if you look back, I suppose, at the most recent 10 years of the Irish management, there seems to be a huge amount of pressure put on Irish managers over the years. Did you find that same amount of pressure on your shoulders?
Oh yeah, perhaps even more, because I lived in Ireland. Jack Charlton followed me, Mick McCarthy, it wasn't until Brian Kerr. I mean, living in the country made it, you just couldn't get away from it. Whether you won a game or lost a game, it was your whole life. Trapattoni can get on a plane and go back to Milan, and Mick McCarthy went back to wherever it was, Barnsley. Jack went back up to Pontyland up in Newcastle. So, okay, that was handy. And I'm saying, okay, there is a pressure there, of course. It doesn't matter what era you're talking about. It was the highest at the time. It's the highest now. Now there's much more media, sort of intense media interest, more perhaps than there was in my day and even in Jack's day. But and that actually brings its own pressure because, everybody wants a story and, about how to get a headline out of it, and sometimes there can be unfair criticism handed out because of that, and that's the name of the game. That's it. Once you're in the job, well, that's fine. I mean, Traps has been paid good money to cope with that. It is a different, I suppose, the huge difference that I feel about it, looking at it, the what's afforded to the players and their chances of qualification is much greater. I mean, we had 16-man squads, and in essence, we had one day to prepare for games because Liam Brady was playing in Italy on the Sunday, so he travelled on the Monday. So we had a Tuesday to prepare for the game on Wednesday. Looking back, it was really, you can imagine yourself.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of, there's a special week build-up. I always wanted to qualify for that reason, that you would have time together as a squad to knit the unit. That's the big change, I think. There's much more money put into it. In my day, it was just a question of, you have 16 players, and it was a huge kind of, please, can I have 17? Because of the finances at the time. It was a totally different. I mean, it was very amateurish in lots of ways. Not from the players' point of view, but from the support I'm talking about. The support to the unit I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you there was big players during your time when you were managing. Like, you had the likes of Liam Brady and Frank Stapleton and that. And did you ever find it hard, because they were such big names? Was it ever hard to deal with such big names and big personalities, I suppose, in the squad?
No. I mean, the bigger the name, the bigger the player, the more professional they were. So when those lads came across to play for their country, there was never any discipline problems. My job was basically to say, look, set it out the way we're going to play. My philosophy was, okay, look, we'll get, the system must suit the players. Now, Jack came and he totally reversed that philosophy. The players had to suit the system.
Yeah.
Well, okay, he qualified, so fine. He, there's people who say, you need a bit of luck. I mean, in my ear, I can say it's well reported that we didn't get the breaks, but that was the disappointing part for me, because we had such good players who really deserved to be at a World Cup. 82, I suppose, was the big chance we had when it was a goal difference. But it's Trapattoni, by the way, he falls, in my opinion, he's kind of in between the two philosophies. The system to suit the players to suit the system. He marries the two, and that's good to see. It's a different era, and it's. For my part, I'm just I'm delighted to be still involved and to be able to pass comment and to be able to remark on how well the whole thing has come together.
Yeah, because one of the things maybe that you might be able to, that might have been similar with yourself and Giovanni Trapattoni, is the sense that he's kind of made the Irish squad into a club team. And I think a lot of Irish squads over the years have played, and, you know, there is a bit of a togetherness. And I know Dave Langan had tweeted us, he was saying that you yourself are a gentleman and they all loved playing for you. So was that one of the bonuses, to try and get this an Irish team playing like a club squad?
Yeah, we did have a very good, I suppose, morale. There's no doubt about it. And again, I go back to, you know, it was such a disappointing thing not to get through to a final and to have that month together and whatever, you know. And that would have stood in good stead for future. But you were always up against the, you know, sort of, the minimum of time that you had to prepare. And then, of course, I mean, the officials in there, stupid wisdom or whatever you want to call it, like, I mean, some of the tours they sent us on were ridiculous, you know, weakened squads and all that. I mean, stupidly, I can say I've got the best record of any Irish manager and the worst, and that actually sums it up. You know, 7-0 away to Brazil, loss, and shortly afterwards 8-0 win against Malta. So you know what I mean? It just that actually sums up the way it was then, because we couldn't go. That was the Falklands War, and I won't talk you bore with that, but it was a stupid thing to arrange a tour against, to play against Argentina when England were at war with them. You know, but getting back to the spirit, we had a fabulous spirit. You know, Paul McGrath, I introduced him. Kevin Moore, another great character. And all those fellas, and Mick McCarthy I brought into it to give it a little bit of, he got the nickname Captain Fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, because he was a real kind of, he was a fella that would shake up the others out there on the pitch. You know, he didn't give a damn about reputations and all that. So you're playing away from home, and the manager can be screaming and shouting from the touchline, but it's out there that it matters. So, you know, I'd never any problems about discipline or anything like that, because they all were so keen to represent their country. You know, and again, comments by James, was it there, or Joe, I'm not sure, but the supporters, even in my day, there was a great travelling support. And I was always proud of our supporters, because they are unique. You know, they really are, and their reputation across the world. And I know that because I've been travelling a bit, and you know, the Irish supporters, sure, they have a few points, but they sing and they're happy and they get on with it, and there's no nonsense like the English supporters where they want to fight and call us all sorts of nonsense. And of course, that transfers itself onto the team, I suppose.
It does indeed, yeah.
And I mean, that's what I think, without going into England's problems, that's where Roy Hodgson, and I think actually he will get them playing for their shirt much more than any previous manager has in the recent past anyway, because they, you know, they're all sort of superstars and individuals going out to represent their country, and that's what we have in our favour. And it's great, as I say, that there's going to be so many supporters out there, and our guys are, you know, it's, I hate the expression of anything over 100%, but that's what we're going to get from our guys.
Certainly will. And you touched on it there, Owen, about, you know, you've been through you've had some terrific highs and some pretty bad lows as well. And of course, another thing that would have been similar to Trapattoni's tenure as Ireland manager is, of course, you know, you yourself being very hard done by against Belgium. I mean, Ireland scored a perfectly good goal that was disallowed, and then Belgium scored, and I mean, it's real heartbreaking stuff. And I mean, what would you say to the players afterwards? It would have been, I guess, they would have been feeling identical to what the Irish lads felt in Paris there after the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought at the night in Paris. I thought, gee, it reminded me of that particular game in Belgium. The irony of that was Jeff Charlton was there as a FIFA or UEFA kind of observer. And he came into the dressing room, and you could see your grown man cry, you know. So, and he made a comment about, I've never seen such referee. And of course, it was subsequently not proven that that referee, there was a culture of referees being biased. I mean, there was nothing to stop referees actually being told by the host association, listen, if you have a good game, there might be a nice car waiting for you at the airport. You know, that's the way it was.
Raul, you know, Nazar was the manager, or was the referee, I think, in that match against Belgium.
Yeah, Nazare was his name, by the way. I'll never forget it. Yeah. But look, I mean, that's history. As far as I'm concerned, I'm one of Ireland's best supporters, and you know, it is great to be going out here again, and you know, sort of especially as I say, with the country, the economics stuff that's going on, and it gives everybody a lift. And it's amazing. I mean, I live in Kerry now, and it's very much a Gaelic football country. But I'll tell you what, the bug is down here amongst everybody.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well, it is. It's great. It's everybody wanting and getting involved and whatever. There's a great buzz about the place. I was at a thing there yesterday. Was a promotion about all the publicans of Kerry getting together and, encouraging people to come and watch and, do the thing there and all that. And even that now, okay, it was just great. But that can be multiplied by whatever. There's lots of interest about everything about this game.
Yeah, fantastic.
About this tournament, I mean.
It certainly is. It grabs the country. James, you've been trawling through the Why Big Irish Soccer Fans Forum and you've been looking at a few questions that fans have put up that they'd like to ask Owen.
Yeah, first of all, it's brilliant to hear Owen tell those stories. But as I said, what some of the fans have been saying is, and perhaps maybe younger people, and even it is a little before my time, that don't realise it, the team Owen had some brilliant players in it. And as he said before, maybe Jack manipulated them to play his system, whereas Owen perhaps let them play a bit more, but as he said, perhaps didn't have the luck.
Absolutely.
But is there any one Irish player from the past, and maybe particular from his own team, that he'd love to see in the squad in the present day? Would it be Paul McGrath, or who would Owen pick?
I'll tell you, I might surprise you, although maybe I won't. The player I would love to see would be Mark Larenson. That guy was just, he was just... You could play him anywhere. You could say to Mark, listen, we're short of a goalkeeper. He'd go in, goal, and he'd be brilliant. So in terms of the overall addition to a team, Mark Lawrence. Now, okay, Liam Brady, a genius that could unlock defences. Frank Stapleton, goal scorer. We had some good players. There's no doubt about that. Kevin Moran, as I say, Mick McCarthy. Who else would I pick out? But, Lawrenson to me was just, he was such a good professional and so devoted. And, of course, there's a few accusations thrown at him because he was, at the time, he was one of the English lads.
English-born Irish, yeah.
Yeah. But, Mark was just totally committed and a fabulous athlete, absolutely tremendous athlete. Ahead of his time, there's no doubt about it, ahead of his time. He was as quick as lightning. He could play in midfield. You could put him up front if you wanted. He was just one of those players. So that's to answer your question. It might surprise you that I haven't picked Liam Brady. But yeah, sure, Liam was brilliant. But in terms of, if I had to choose, say, if I was picking, Mark would be the first one on the team sheet, put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I know Joe has a question. I know, Owen, we haven't really touched on your career yet as a footballer, but Joe, you want to ask Owen about his time in South Africa, is it?
Yeah, Owen. Just mentioning you mentioned Roy Hodgson there, who's recently taken over as England manager, and he was asked in his press conference about his time in South Africa. I was just wondering, did your paths ever cross when you were in South Africa? Did you have any similar experiences there?
Yes, yeah. I was out there and I was there. He was playing for a club called Berea Park in Johannesburg. I've met Roy over the years, yeah. He's a real football man. He's one of these guys that, if you're in his company for a few hours, you'd actually get bored because he just talks football, and about, this system, that player, this player. And, sometimes, come on, give us a break, will you? So, he's... I'm not saying that I'm not. Of course, I am. I'm football all my life, but he is a real kind of keeper. He goes into all. I think that might be a problem with the players. If he goes on too much, they might just get give us a break, will you? There's other things because when you actually are preparing a squad, you have to give them a little bit of free time and you have to diversify. You can't just be drumming things into them because it loses effect then. But I think he was the proper appointment for England. He's a good man. He's a good type of guy. And he won't tolerate any of the stuff that was, the off-the-field antics that England players were getting up to there in recent years. He won't tolerate that. I know that. So, yeah, I've met him at plenty of coaching seminars and various international games and whatever. And he's done very well, international-wise, the countries that he has managed. So, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I met him a few times in South Africa when I was trying my bit down there, coaching AmaZulu in Durban for a very short time because it was actually apartheid in reverse in that situation. But that's another long story.
Oh yeah, those stories tend to, you know, they go on and on, and it's really fascinating some of the experiences that a lot of footballers that might have played down there can recall. What about your time there on in Portsmouth? No doubt a lot of good memories, but I suppose when you're looking at the side now, and I know they've had their problems in the last 2 years, or that we've had Alan McLaughlin on the programme there about a month ago, and he was saying that they're working really hard, but I mean, you probably have a lot of good memories from Fratton Park.
Oh, I had 11 years there, yeah, great years. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was a real family club. Now, looking back, I can say not that ambitious. I mean, it was just content. They were content to sort of be in the second division. And there was no real push to get into the first, which is the equivalent, the first standard of football as it was then, simply because there wasn't the money in the club. It was kind of, I think the record signing we had at the time was a fellow called Peter Marinello from Arsenal. It was 100 grand. Mike Trebilko was another lad who scored goals for Everton in the cup final against Sheffield Wednesday. He was 50 grand or something like that. So it was small money, you know, for even at that time. So it wasn't a very ambitious, but it was a great kind of family club. And I enjoyed my time there. And I enjoyed the fact that I was capped for Ireland, like, during my time there. And I have great memories of it. And it's an awful tragedy that mismanagement has put it into, greedy people mismanaging have put it into the situation. Because, again, the Pompey supporters, they're great. You know, they're enthusiastic or whatever, and they got the Pompey chimes. It was always a great atmosphere when we had a regular gate. There was 18,000 for every league game, which wasn't bad, really.
Yeah, fantastic. James, I know you wanted to ask Owen a little bit about the League of Ireland, because I know when we had Dominic Foley on, he was talking about the players, and Owen, of course, has been heavily involved with League of Ireland clubs across Ireland and that, but you have a question for him about that.
Yeah, Owen, obviously you're well known now as a League of Ireland pundit with RTE, but it must give you a lot of satisfaction to see the likes of McLean and Doyle and Fahy coming from the league here and getting into the international setup.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, I've always said the League of Ireland, it's the highest standard in this country, and people are inclined to knock it. I mean, the lads that go across the water to follow Liverpool and whoever, Man United and whatever, it kind of amazes me, you know, when they've no connections other than seeing them on the television. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. But don't shun your own league, because it is the top standard here. And it's been proven. I mean, six players going to this tournament. I've always said it. You know, I mean, you give lads a full-time environment. And it's been proven, too, by the lads, say, that young lads that I've been dealing with, where they've come back. And I've been advising them over the years and saying, OK, look, you just show your stuff. You were a boy when you went over. You're a young man now. And, okay, it was one coach's decision or maybe a budget situation in a club that you were let go. So if you're good enough and to be taken at 16, you're more mature now. So if you do your stuff in the League of Ireland, if you want to go to a higher standard, it's there for you. And that's been proven with quite a number of players who came back. Keith Fahy is a good example. There's a lot over the years that have done that. You know, so there's the standard in the League of Ireland, everything about it has improved. The pitches, I mean, you know, the facilities, the grounds all over the country. Maybe when I was managing Limerick, I mean, the pitches where sometimes you had to change your tactics to suit the surface type of thing, you know, don't try and get it down and all that. But yeah, I think that the league, I think it's a shame that there isn't more support given to it, because we are so close to UK, and there's an awful lot of comparisons. I hate it when anybody says to me, oh, I wouldn't watch that rubbish. I hate that. I really do. It just gets up my nose. You know, because you can't compare, you know, fellows who are earning and, you know, the budgets and whatever, millions across the water, and lads who are earning 200 grand a week, you know, with lads who are bread and butter stuff here. But that's the message I say to any young lad. You can do your stuff in the League of Ireland. You'll be spotted. You know, you might think that there's nobody knows and whatever, but you are spotted. There's a big scouting network. You know, everybody is aware of who's the up-and-coming player in this country. So that's what's proven. And of course, I mean, the FAI must get credit as well, because they've established all these RDOs around the country and the emerging talent programs and all that, which, I mean, that's over probably in the last 10 years, it's really come on leaps and bounds. And, you know, soccer is not just the cities anymore. It's all over the country, as I'm sure the lads know.
Absolutely. And Joe, I mean, that'll probably be music to your ears, because we had the likes of Dominic Foley on and that, and talking about how to improve the game and how the game is getting better in Ireland. And as Owen was saying, the next big thing is in, it could be in the league. I mean, we've seen the likes of James McLean, as James was saying, and young Danny Kearns going over to Peterborough and that and doing well. So it kind of gets you really looking to watch more games.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is what I think. You know, having those players in the squad, you know, obviously raised the profile of the league. And I think that, you know, the experience that they got playing at the highest level in the League of Ireland, and, you know, even European experience with the likes of Shamrock Rovers and Derry, obviously helped them out there a lot. And, I would hope that it would help, you know, it would encourage people to go to more of their local games. You know, we have a great tradition of, you know, sporting, you know, strong fan support here in Ireland. And, you know, we're lucky that we have, you know, we've rugby and we've soccer and GAA that we can all go and see on our doorstep, you know, and it's, when I say, like, at international level.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd hope that's, you know, the these players coming through show the strength of the league that's there, and, you know, games, and would convince people to maybe attend more of their local club games rather than watching, you know, something on Sky Sports in the pub.
Yeah. Before we let you go there, Owen, I know a couple of the lads on the Why Big forum, they were looking for us to ask you. One of them, Jer Kevill, he was saying that he believes you're a very good balladeer and released a great album called After the Ball, and he was looking for you to play at one of those Why Big gigs someday.
Not a problem. People ask me, you know, when I go into whatever, every venue or something, people say to me, will you sing a song? I said, I sing when I'm asked. So if anybody asks me, they can't shut me up. So that answers your question.
That would be your party piece, Owen, would it?
Well, no, that was the thing I did for Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Brilliant.
The charity gig that I did. And it was Mickey McConnell, who's famous for writing the song Only Our Rivers Run Free. I'm a good friend of his. He's a tremendous songwriter. In fact, he's written a lovely song for me about the Brazen Head, because my mother used to own the Brazen Head, the oldest pub in Ireland.
Right, yeah.
And he's written a fabulous song. Now, you know, it's up there with, in my opinion, in his opinion, it's up there with Only Our Rivers Run Free. And so it's the same kind of, you know, because the rare old times, it's, you know, like I say, the Brazen Head, the oldest pub in Ireland. And it's it kind of touches on the greed and deceit of our modern era, and then it's a song of hope for the future. So, yeah, so, I mean, I'm very much immersed in that kind of thing. I love the music. I've been learning the banjo since 1957.
Nice.
So, that'll tell you how good I am on it. Brutal.
Yeah, I'd say that's the thing. It takes years and years and years, and still, you still can't get it.
I was diversifying all the time. Football got in the way too many times.
Ah, yeah. But it's good to have an escape. And finally, one of the guys on Twitter, Paul Cullen, he says, Dave, ask Owen, does he remember selling me my first Ireland scarf in the early 80s in his sports shop in Firhouse Shopping Centre?
Well, I don't remember that particular one, but I do remember selling scarves, all right, a great community up there. I had a great time there. I mean, it was just a pity that the economy of the country at the time wouldn't support the sports shop. Of himself and Tony Ward opened it, and then Tony went into O'Connell, just off O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
And It was sad that it didn't survive. But again, I suppose, I mean, I was managing Ireland at the time, and I remember, I'm sure I would remember the face, all right, if I saw that Jerry, you know, so there was a lot of support from the local community there, you know, for me at the time, and I really did appreciate it. And I enjoyed my time there, because I lived not far away, just at Delaford there. Just go across to Delaney's and the odd time sing a song there, then the Firhouse Inn. And then of course playing football with Jim Barkley, you know, Jim from Fair City.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, Bella, and that's his name on the show. Yeah, so I have great memories of my time up in Firhouse there.
Fantastic. And just before I let you go, Owen, Joe, I know you have a connection to Owen in some way.
Yeah, Dave. Owen. Dave mentioned it there at the start of the earlier show that I'm from Limerick, and I'm actually from St. Patrick's Parish in the city itself, and St. Bridget's Church would have been my local parish church. And your sister-in-law, Geraldine, used to run the play school there years ago, and that's where I started my my school career, and my two brothers followed after me there, and eventually my mother ran it for a brief period as well. So it's something I remember my mother telling me years ago, that, you know, her brother-in-law used to manage Ireland, and you know, and it was only when I started, you know, getting into soccer that I realised how massive that was, and still is. And you know, now when I go to Ireland games, you know, I always make sure I have the little radio with me, and I get your match commentary. So it's just a little connection there between myself and yourself. You know, they say everyone's only connected by seven people, so that's only two between us.
Well, that's nice to hear. That's really nice to hear. Yeah. Yes, yeah, Geraldine would be very involved in that kind of thing, in that area, all right, yeah. So it's an amazing, how small a world it is. Mind you, I mean, I kind of, you know, I've got to say that, you know, Limerick was so good to me, because I wouldn't have got the chance to manage my country without the help of that Limerick team that I had then. They were great lads. They really were. Johnny Walsh, Joe O'Mahony, you know, all those boys there, you know, they really were great guys. Brendan Gordon, Kevin Fitzpatrick. And again, by the way, getting back to the singing, the rules were that, you know, when we were coming back from games, every one of them had to sing a song. So, you know, great memories of Limerick. And of course, I'm living in Kerry now, which is just, what, 35 miles away where I am. So I meet up with the lads. Actually, I missed out on the golf day, a reunion of our team, the team that I had. They get together once a year, and unfortunately I was out of the country there last week when they had this reunion, and I love going back there, because we're friends now. Everybody I meet is just, it's a lovely, lovely feeling, and it's a, you know, it's great to be friends with the lads that you managed. So, you know, it's a nice, it's a lovely nostalgic thing for me.
Fantastic. So for listen on, I have to say you're absolutely total gent, and thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football show this evening, and we wish you the very best of luck in the future, and we look forward to continuing to enjoy the great commentary and analysis that you do on all Ireland games.
Well, thank you very much, Dave, and just wish the lads well in their travels there, and all the other lads that'll be going out there, because I mean it really is a great commitment to boys, financially, you know, and time-consuming, to go and follow their country. So, I mean, I just hope that they have a great time, and that we get the results that will really make it worthwhile, that we can all look back on this summer as being something really, really special.
And no doubt we will. Owen Hand, thanks a million.
Okay, Dave. Good night to you. Bye-bye.
Yes, indeed. Former Ireland manager and Ireland player, former singer-songwriter, former shop worker and entrepreneur and everything, and total gent, it has to be said. That was Owen Hand talking to us here on the Why Big Football Show. We're now joined on the line by our man in Derry, Ryan. Thanks a million for coming on the show.
I'm happy to be on. Thanks for having me, Dave.
No problem at all, Ryan. And I guess we'll start really getting your views towards the inclusions of Paul Green and Paul McShane to the squad. Obviously, it's kind of heartbreaking for Keith Fahey and Kevin Foley. For yourself, seeing this kind of unfold, I suppose it's positives for the two Pauls, but it's, I guess, really hard to take for the likes of Keith Fahey and Kevin Foley.
Yeah, I was actually a bit surprised by Kevin Foley's exclusion, because the sounds that were coming out of the training camp, it sounded like he was going to be starting at right back, and then all of a sudden it came out that he wasn't fit enough. But I think that maybe Trapattoni and Tardelli probably thought that, you know, with Richard Dunn and Sean Sutledger and Darren O'Dea all carrying Knox, or, you know, not being 100% really, that with Paul McShane's ability to play at centre-back, that versatility coming into it again probably came into it as well.
Do you think it's a little bit... I know Owen Hand made the point that, well, at least, you know, they've said to Kevin Foley he can stay. But I suppose, Ryan, you know, you know a lot of footballers. There's not really much point. They wouldn't want to stay with a squad when they can't play, when they're itching to play. It's not nice to be, I suppose, with a squad if you're injured, just to look on. You'd rather be at home watching it on the telly, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've spoken to a couple of guys that were saying that, you know, if they're not playing, they, you know, they don't want to even hear about it. And you've even heard the likes of Roy Keane saying that he doesn't really, you know, be watching it anymore at all. Like, you know, now that he's not involved. It must be, I don't know what it is. Maybe Foley's just hoping maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. What? Which, James, what do you make about that whole situation? Obviously, Ryan made a very valid point, and it's probably the reason why Trapattoni has included Paul McShane in his final squad, which he submitted to FIFA. The fact that he has the ability to play in both centre back and right back, and as Owen Hand was saying, he does have a right old engine on him for getting up the right wing and that kind of thing. So that's probably it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit baffled, not about the centre-back or the right-back, and we touched on it before, the left-back position there. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. When John O'Shea got injured in the last game for Sunderland, there was a scare, and McShane was the first on the standby list. So, okay, McShane was going to come in instead of O'Shea.
Yeah.
But there's no cover for left back now if O'Shea gets injured.
I keep going on about Mark Wilson. and don't get me started again, because I've been told by the YBIG football following that once I start about advocating Mark Wilson's inclusion
I don't want to go over old ground, but the point is, John O'Shea was in the squad and we had no cover for left back because Trapattoni has said O'Shea can play there and Stephen Kelly can play there. When O'Shea got injured, the first call-up was a right-back in McShane. So if O'Shea gets injured now, there's no left-back cover if Ward is to get injured. I'm just making the point that
yeah.
McShane is now in the squad as cover for right-back and centre-back, and we have one left-back. And Stephen Kelly, even though Trapattoni says it, can't play at left-back, in my opinion. Or at least he wouldn't do as good a job as a proper left back like Wilson, and we won't mention any more on it now, Dave, if you like.
All right, what about Joe, coming to yourself, what about Greg Cunningham? Now, we've seen him in action for Ireland at left back. He played well for the under-21s last night. I think, did he captain them, Joe?
He did, actually, yeah. It's the first time I've seen Greg play in a while, actually, not since the friendly game against Norway. I wasn't able to see him when he was on loan at Leicester, and unfortunately Nottingham Forest didn't get many games. Or many live games this year, so I wasn't able to see him then. And he's definitely grown a bit since the last time I saw him. I think he might only have been 18 or 19, and I think he's into his 20s now. He's definitely a lot bigger, and he looks a lot stronger as well. Whatever kind of training he'd been doing in the gym definitely seems to have paid off. I actually thought he was one of the stronger performers on the night last night in Tala. He was playing with Aidan Weiss of Leeds in front of him on the left wing.
Yeah.
And they linked up very well together. I thought Greg, you know, he showed great desire to get forward. You know, he played well on the overlap. He definitely played the captain's role as well. You know, he was ordering the defence around. He was telling people where to stand, telling them when to come deep, you know, trying to make people available for the ball. I think he should have been on the fringes of the squad, you know, even on the call up list for the European Championships. I think, you know, not playing in the qualifiers probably counted against him, which is just unfortunate because he was out with a long term injury, and then you know, Stephen Ward stepped up and Kevin Caban was still part of the setup. I think he'll definitely get a chance in the World Cup qualifiers, you know, starting in the autumn, and you know, I'd even hope to see him get a call up for whatever friendly games are on in August. But I definitely think he could nail down that left back spot in future.
Yeah, Ryan, coming to you, and Ireland's defensive problems, there's a lot of them. James highlighted it. If we lose John O'Shea, then we don't have any more cover at left back, and we're in a little bit of trouble. What do you think is going to happen if we keep losing? I mean, Sean St. Ledger, I know, isn't 100% fit. He says, I heard him on radio saying that he'll be fine, and please God, touch wood, he is. But what do you think is going to happen if more and more of our defenders drop out?
I wouldn't be too sure. I'm almost sure that Trapattoni name-checked Damien Delaney there as well, but he wasn't included in one of the most recent squads, like the Czech Republic game.
Yeah.
And it seemed that the likes of Duffy the younger ones were going to get their chance, and they were going to come through and all. But to be honest, even whenever you look at the left back spot, other than Greg Cunningham, I can't really think of any other players that would be a candidate for that for that spot. I can't even think of any young players. Enda Stevens, for example, only made the move over to Aston Villa there, and he wouldn't be anywhere near ready, I would say.
Well, they say Kieran Clark can play. I mean, Kieran Clark has played a lot of games for Aston Villa in the left-back position, but because he has this kind of all-round ability, I know he has been playing in midfield and that, but he's definitely another name I know that Trapattoni name-checked for the future. But I mean, should these lads not have been given a call, say, by Trapattoni, just to say, to be on a standby list, maybe?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely. That's a big criticism of Trapattoni, isn't it? He hasn't really given too many people that many chances, like Lisa Clark and stuff.
I suppose one of the positives, lads, that we have to take out of the preparations for the Euros, it won't be another Saipan. We've seen the beautiful facilities that the Irish lads are training at in Italy at the moment, and then when they move on to Poznan and Gdansk, they're going to have the best. And Ryan, I think it's probably fair to say we won't have another Roy Keane situation.
Yeah, all the guys seem to have a good bond there. There's a lot of team spirit about the place, and they're like Roy Keane again. I was just reading an article there in the Sunday Times there the other day, and he was saying that he didn't think that there would be another Saipan because they weren't going there just for the crack or anything. They were going there like they wanted to make noise at the tournament, and
yeah,
he was
praising it. Yeah, which was, you know, which was interesting from Roy Keane's perspective, considering, you know, we've heard a few things about certain individual players who he's been passing comments. But regarding the facilities, I suppose, Ryan, it's very refreshing to hear Roy Keane say that.
It is, yeah, definitely. I mean, but saying that, like, I would be worried about that recent development today with the tremors and whatnot. That might be a source of consternation and worry. They're playing that game and all. So,
yeah, and just to mention to our listeners, the Why Big Football Show is recorded in during that match, and Simon Cox has scored the second goal for Ireland, and Ireland are currently 2-0. Robbie Keane with the first goal, so it's all going well against a Tuscany selection, so it's pretty good. Joe, just going a little bit back to the under-21s, which was I know it was only a friendly against Denmark in Talis Stadium earlier in the week. The big one is, of course, next week against Italy in the qualifiers. A couple of standout performers for the 21s, even though they lost 2-1 or that. Robbie Brady scoring a terrific free kick. He's going to be a big player for Ireland, no doubt, in the future. He's just, the class oozes off him, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, he was, you know, every time he had the ball at his feet, you know, he was getting forward into the Danish penalty area. You know, they didn't know what to do with him. He's a bit strange for a winger. He's actually quite stocky. You know, he's not going to get pushed off the ball easily. He's very comfortable on the ball. He's a great dribbler. And obviously he's got great shooting ability. You know, the free kick to open the scoring last night was from a good 30 odd yards out, but he got the ball up over the wall and then into the top corner of the goal. And the keeper never got near it. He was actually unlucky not to have scored in the first half. He got the ball in the back of the net, but it was disallowed for a deflection. He came off of Reece Murphy, who was up front, who was actually standing in an offside position. From where I was standing, I didn't think he was offside at all, but the linesman flagged, and it was unfortunate. It was unfortunately disallowed. If I could have any criticism of him, it would be that he did tend to leave the right foot that was playing behind him, John Egan of Sunderland. I think he was making his debut at under 21 level. He did leave him a little exposed, but like I said, the attacking side of his game that is so strong at the moment that I think, you know, that's the other side of things, the defensive, the tracking back, that's going to come with experience. I think if you look at the way United have used the loan system over the last few years, in particular with players like Tom Cleverley and Danny Welbeck. They've gone out on loan first to lower league clubs, to the likes of Preston and Hull, and then after they've done like a year in the Championship, they've I think Welbeck was at Sunderland and Cleverley went to Wigan. So I'd like to see Brady get, you know, to follow that tradition, maybe get a run at somewhere like Wigan, where they have a working relationship with Sir Alex, and I think you know he's definitely, definitely by the end of the World Cup qualifiers, I think he will have he'll have at least one senior cap.
Yeah, James, a point about the under 21s, and it has to be said, there's some really good players in there. I mean, we see the likes of Shane Duffy. We've seen what he can do in the Premier League for Everton. Jeff Hendrick has been Derby County's main man. Greg Cunningham, as you said, pretty good. Aidan White, he's been one of Leeds United's best players. Robbie Brady, of course, excellent. Another two players that are going to be coming back for the crucial game against Italy will, of course, be Samir Carruthers from Aston Villa, who got a couple of games in the Premier League. He got, I think, 20 minutes in one game, 10 minutes in another, and then got the last five in another. And Sean Murray, who was on sparkling form for Watford. We have an abundance of talent coming through, James. It's good to see.
It's brilliant to see. And myself and yourself spoke about this before, and we touched on it about the managers we've had in the past. And let's be honest, Don Givens had an atrocious record there.
Yeah.
Well, he did. And he was left in the job far too long. And perhaps one or two players we've had in the past didn't live up to their potential, perhaps because of that. But, you know, we've got a manager now. We've got, as you say, we've got a lot of players coming through. There's quite a few at Aston Villa. You'll all have seen I think there was a photo going around of the 11, full 11 Irish players.
And that Aston Villa reserve team won, in fact, the reserve Premier League. And, of course, Derek Williams was the captain. Mikey Drennan with the goal. They have a load of Irish playing.
Yeah, and Mikey Drennan is a young lad from Kilkenny, which is great to see. And he actually captained St. Kieran's College to the Leinster title under 15.
So brilliant.
Obviously, St. Kieran's is one of the most famous hurling schools in the country. But Mikey, who himself was a great hurler, was captain of that Kieran's team. And now he looks like he's doing the business at Villa. So there's players coming through there. And interestingly, a lot of the talk over here in London is obviously about the Olympics and the Team GB. And if we had been posting results in the past under previous managers, it's that level, as far as I'm aware, qualifies you for the Olympics. And these lads could have been looking at something like London, but we'll have to wait another couple of years. But it looks like Noel King has them going in the right direction.
He certainly does. And Ryan, just a point about King. He seems to be an unbelievable open manager. He's got this openness that we haven't really seen at under 21 level in the past. I mean, as James mentioned, we've had Don Givens in charge of the under 21s, but King seems to be open. I mean, we've seen the young lad, the young goalkeeper in America, who's not sure if he wants to come and play for Ireland or that, but King has said the door is open. If you feel you want to come over the next time, we're absolutely open to it. He doesn't rule anything out. And that, it has to be said, Ryan, that makes a great change to the stories we always heard of bust-ups in the past with a so-called under-21 manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And another player that was kind of, you thought he might have been exiled for speaking out in the media was Matt Doherty, right back Matt Doherty.
Yeah.
He said he was very disappointed and couldn't believe that he'd been excluded from the squad or only made the standby list. And he kind of suggested that, you know, he didn't care about being on the standby list. And Noel King kind of took the positives from that. He said that, well, at least he wants to play rather than saying, you know, taking it thick as others may have done in the past and exiling them. And so It's definitely refreshing to see. He's also very frank sometimes with the media whenever they ask him questions. Like I remember whenever it came out that Eunan O'Kane was going to be switching from the north, he said, you know, the question must have implied that there had been something underhand going on, and King dismissed it. He says, look, We met in Ireland and we discussed his options, and it's as simple as that. You know, it wasn't like we were trying to steal him or or whatever, as it was being implied.
And so that seemed to be implied a lot, Ryan, about this kind of the stealing. But as you said, King was quick to, you know, to clear everything up.
Yeah, it's nice to see a mature comments coming from the management like that. And I think King's in a position actually as well to take over from Wim Kuvermans as like a director of football type character for youth development. So he seems to be the right man there. And he's got a good track record as well with ladies. So
A lot of players seem to be giving him so much respect. Lads, just before we go, on a kind of a political note there, James, obviously the Irish team are going to be wearing a black armband to commemorate the victims of the Lochan Island massacre. Now, it's obviously a very sensitive issue. The families had actually, I think, approached the FAI about doing something because it was Irish fans watching Ireland against Italy in a major tournament in USA 94, a historic victory for Ireland, but also a very bad tragedy, it has to be said. But I guess it's a very good positive from the FAI and UEFA for agreeing to it.
Yeah, I guess regardless of your opinion of whether you keep, you know, if you think politics should be kept out of it, you spelled it out directly there, Dave. The family themselves approached the FAI. We're playing Italy again on the same day, 18 years later. If anything, it's going to be, you know, it's going to bring up all those memories to the family. They were supporters of Ireland. Take away the politics. And Shay Given said it himself. No matter what happened, lives were still lost. And I think I personally think it's a good move, but I can understand why people maybe would object to it. But again, as you say, if you lay it out, it's going to be raw for the families. They approached the FAI and they've agreed to it. And they were Irish supporters watching Ireland play. And, you know, to be playing Italy again on the day of it is quite amazing. And it should be marked.
Absolutely. Joe, you'd probably echo that from James in the sense that, you know, it was a big tragedy. But I guess plaudits should go to the FAI and UEFA for going along with it as well.
Yeah, I think I honestly don't remember too much about the incident at the time, but I think obviously with the anniversary coming up, you know, the coincidence of the opposition and even the date involved, you know, it was always going to be in the public eye. There's going to be reports about it in the press, and I think they kind of got ahead of that. You know, they realized what was going to happen. The families involved realized, you know, how significant it was all going to be, and you know, obviously got into the FAI, and I'd like to, you know, give the FAI credit on this for going to UEFA and making sure that it was going to be observed, because a lot of the times UEFA would shy away, and FIFA as well, from making any kind of political statements or political stances. But obviously they felt that this was a respectful, you know, observance of the anniversary of the tragedy, and they were happy to let it go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think usually you see commemorations at big tournaments like this, so it'll probably make a first. But as you said, you know, fair play to the FAI and to UEFA. Just before we go, Joe, there's been a Guardian poll, I think, done about the best goal in European football, in European club football, as far as I know, and one of the contenders is from right here in Ireland.
Yeah, that's right. Chris Forrester's goal for St. Patrick's Athletic a few weeks ago, a lovely little lob that got mentioned not just here in Ireland, but also it was noted on Sky Sports. I saw it on Soccer AM in the kind of skill school or skill little segment that they have there at the very end of the show. So the Guardian are running a poll at the moment for the best goal in European club football this season. So you've got the likes of Cisse's volley against Chelsea, goals from the Premier League and goals from Serie A. And in there as well is Forrester's goal for St. Patrick's Athletic. So I'd ask anyone that's listening to the show just to go onto the Guardian's website. It's under the sports section, under the soccer section, and just to vote for Forrester's goal.
Terrific stuff, Ryan. That's a great positive for the League of Ireland to have goals like that being shown, you know, across Europe and across the world, and for the League of Ireland to be getting a good bit of publicity like that, as Joe was saying, on Soccer AM on Sky Sports and that.
Yeah, it is. It's just a testament to the rising standard of the league, maybe. And it's also like Forrester was named in the on the standby list, I think, for the upcoming 21 under 21 games. But I think it was something to do with the only reason that they weren't in is because of the fixture list for the clubs. So they kind of let the League of Ireland players take part in those. Like Sir Patrick McElhinney was in it as well, and Gerald Morrissey. So it's great to see, like, to see Chris Forrester's name up there beside the likes of CC and all those guys. Like, it's amazing, really, whenever you think of the stature of the league, you know, even only like 10, 15 years ago. But the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo is in there, and he's actually above Cristiano Ronaldo in the fold at the moment. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, lads, just before I go, Ryan, I happened to stumble upon a nice little article in the Why Big fanzine this month that was in the Star newspaper. It was yourself, you did an interview, I think it was, with Rob Kiernan of the Irish under 21s. He's a big rising star at Wigan.
Yeah, unfortunately he didn't get really fit enough in time to take part in the under 21 games. He's devastated about that. But he's already told me to send over a copy for him, and he's hoping to be fit for the Turkey game. So, you know, keep an eye out for him there.
Absolutely, and well done on the article in the Why Big fanzine. You can download copies from whybig.ie. Well, lads, I'm afraid we're out of time here on the Why Big Football Show. My thanks to James, Joe and Ryan for joining me, and of course our special guest, former Ireland player and manager Owen Hand. Lads, we'll do it all again next week. Thanks a million for the pleasure of your company. Come on, the boys in green. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Tony's got us there once again. European Championship qualification's gonna be the best spectacle that you have ever seen when we travel over with the boys in green. So first we play Croatia, gonna go and greet ya. Really nice to meet ya, now we're gonna beat ya. When we play Italy, live back in 94, and once again we're gonna be the only team to score. Now even though we've got the reigning champion Spain, the look of the Irish will always remain. We're Ireland, we're on our way to Poland and Ukraine to win the Euros now. We're not afraid of Italy, Germany, Holland, even France, even Spain. We cruise through every round. Forget about recession, it won't matter anymore. When Robbie Keane got busted, Ledger Hunt start to score. On the pitch we will be skillful and defend till the end. Sir Richard Dunn will drive the opposition round the bend. And if the final comes to penalties, the problem will be small. Shea from Donegal is gonna save us them all. We're Ireland, we're on our way to Poland and Ukraine to win the Euros now. We're not afraid of Italy, Germany, Holland, even France, even Spain. We cruise through every round. We're Ireland, we're on our way to Poland and Ukraine to win the Euros now. We're not afraid of Italy, Germany, Holland, even France, even Spain. We cruise through every round. Ukraine to win the Euros now. We're not afraid of Italy, Germany, Holland, England, France, even Spain. We cruise through every round.